everybody, to the Sun on the Strip podcast. This is Brock Radke, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun, here to get you caught up on everything that's going on in the entertainment world and more on the Las Vegas Strip. Thanks for listening. So I'm recording this at about 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, June 30th. Want to let you know that because things are changing fast. They have been changing fast for a long time and continue to. What is happening on the Strip this week? MGM Resorts is opening two of its largest casino properties on July 1st. Aria and Mandalay Bay are both opening up Wednesday morning. I wrote a huge story about this for LasVegasSun.com. Go check it out right now, wherein I run down all the stuff that's going to be open at these two resorts and just what that means for the Strip right now. A lot of that stuff, again, subject to change. For example, I was surprised to see not very many restaurants at Mandalay Bay are opening up on Wednesday, but who knows? By the time they finally throw the doors open, maybe there will be some other venues in operation. Also opening on July 2nd, the Nobu Hotel Tower inside Caesar's Palace. Earlier this week, Governor Steve Sisolak extended the phase two restrictions of the Nevada Pandemic Recovery Plan. Phase two is going to be extended through at least the end of July. That's not good news for live entertainment and nightclubs and some of the other forms of Vegas fun that people are used to. There were a lot of show producers and performers hoping they might be able to, some of them anyways, might be able to get back on stage towards the end of the month. That's not going to happen. So the current restrictions on ticketed live entertainment at venues, big and small, remain in effect. As I wrote about last week, talked about last week, and continue to write about, some day club pool party venues have reopened as extensions of resort pools. So they don't have the big crazy club operations going on, but they do have music, food and drinks, and most of them are open to guests, even if they're not hotel guests. At MGM Grand, Wet Republic is reopening in that fashion. Similarly, Daylight at Mandalay Bay and Liquid at Aria. And you can read more about that in this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly Magazine or at LasVegasWeekly.com. Another significant piece of news that I wrote about this week, Cirque du Soleil is filing for bankruptcy. The huge live entertainment company is, of course, based in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, runs six of the biggest production shows on the Las Vegas Strip at six different properties. Pretty complicated situation, but you can read all about it right now at LasVegasSun.com. My interview this week is with a Las Vegas born and raised native, Lisa Marie Smith, who was, as you'll hear her say, one of the lucky performers to get to go back to work a little bit early because she has been performing in restaurant spaces, most notably at the Mayfair Supper Club at Bellagio. She's talking all about that in my interview this week. She's also, you're going to hear her talk a little bit about performing off the Strip at Green Valley Ranch Resort. She was singing in the lounge at Hank's Fine Steaks and Martinis, a really great restaurant out there in Henderson. Unfortunately, that gig has been put on hold. Station Casinos updated its live entertainment, and they're not having any singers right now, just different kinds of musicians in those restaurant, bar, and lounge spaces. So she's taking a break from Hank's, but I bet she'll be back there when it's appropriate. She's also talking about her past roles in strip shows like Pinup at the Stratosphere and Baz at Palazzo. She's also talking about forming the Lisa Marie Smith Band with her man Isaac Tubb, one of the most renowned musicians in Las Vegas, a guy who's played in so many different shows, and how that group was really taking off, doing special events and corporate gigs in California and other places around the country when the pandemic struck and changed everything, of course. Really cool conversation. Takes you behind the scenes of what it's like to be an entertainer based in Las Vegas right now. So here you go. Enjoy Lisa Marie Smith.
Now, you got back to work recently when Bellagio reopened and brought back the live entertainment at Mayfair Supper Club. What was it like to get back on stage again after this very stressful temporary shutdown of Vegas entertainment?
It was a kind of combination of relieving and nerve-wracking. I'm just going to be very transparent. I was a little nervous, but I think I was nervous only because I didn't want to get my hopes up that it would continue. I didn't want it to be too good to be true. And I also just wanted to make sure that obviously MGM was doing everything they possibly could to almost an extreme in a good way of making sure everyone felt safe and the sanitation requirements were so extreme. But
right.
I wanted to make sure that the patrons were kind of being respectful of us, like it was a back and forth. And I wasn't really sure if that was going to be the case. So I was worried about that. But in terms of the art form and getting to do that again, it was refreshing, really refreshing.
Yeah, there's been a lot of buzz around Mayfair as kind of being like, this is the first real show to come back to life after the shutdown. But it had gotten a ton of positive reviews before all this, since it opened around New Year's Eve. What do you love about that place and that show?
Oh, gosh, everything. I'm grateful to be a part of it. And being a local and growing up here and having all of my stuff here, it's nice to be a part of something but still have my own stuff going on separately. So I basically walk into my personal Disneyland for right now. It's one day a week, but it's usually 2 days a week. I walk into Disneyland, I experience it, I love it, I'm a part of it, and then I go about my day. But New Ceilings has always been so great at making me feel extremely a part of the family, even though I'm only kind of there part-time. But I love so much about it. I love the company. Everyone's very inclusive, like I mentioned. And I love that there's nothing like it. It's just, when we were putting it together in, because I was a part of creation, I didn't get to do the showcases and stuff because that was obviously going to be more Steve and LaShonda's bag since they were there full-time. But during the creation process, I was having a hard time envisioning what it would look like. And then I'll never forget the walkthrough of the venue. We got to see it, obviously, before anyone, and we were working in there for a while, even while they were under construction. And it hit me, and I was like, oh, my gosh, there's nothing like this. And I remember them talking about it. But everyone always says their show is, like, the most innovative, interesting thing. Everyone's always trying to sell their thing. And this actually met the expectations that I had set into my head. And that's really hard to do. So I love that. And then I also love the fact that there's something for everyone because they run the gamut of you know, styles and genres of music. But most importantly, my background is, musical theater and more like a vocalist as opposed to just kind of singing along the pop songs. I got to really showcase my music knowledge and stuff that I'm super excited about. And I got to be creative and do jazz and blues and kind of explore my voice in ways that I've never gotten to do in a Vegas show. So to me, that's the most important thing, is it's like almost my creative space, and it fulfills a need for me as an artist. So I love that.
Right. Now, you've also been singing for the past couple of weeks, I think, a couple nights a week at Hank's, the really cool steakhouse at Green Valley Ranch Resort. Is that a new gig, or have you played there before?
My favorite two places right now are Bellagio and just working with Stations. Stations Casino asked me to be a vocalist over at T-Bone Steakhouse at the Red Rock. I had auditioned for them years ago, I'd say 2 years ago at this point, and the audition process was quite rigorous for what you would think a steakhouse would have, but they are really picky, rightfully so, about their entertainment. And I'll never forget my first day at T-Bones. I just kind of sat, you know, behind the grand piano and pressed play on my tracks and just sang for 5 hours. And I was like, this is awesome. I can sing whatever I want and people request stuff and I get tipped and that's great. It was almost like a workout, like a voice workout for me because I was there so long. And then unfortunately, T-Bones let go of their live vocalist, and I had been there 2 days a week for a little less than a year. And when they let go of the live vocalist, I was super bummed, obviously because it was a great paycheck, but I had gotten close with the station's, you know, executives, and I had sung for one of the Fertitta's daughters pre-wedding at T-Bones. So they had, and they had asked me to do New Year's Eve at Rock Lounge. So I was like, oh man, I just started getting to know these people and now I'm not doing it anymore. Well, then I did New Year's Eve for a second year at Rock Lounge. And then right after that, they started having me kind of swing into Hank's Steakhouse. And I had done it a handful of times last year, just pop in when somebody was sick or whatever. And I loved it and I got along with everyone. And then right after New Year's Eve, we had a month or two of work and then quarantine hit. And during quarantine, I had talked to my booking agent for that room and I was like, I really want to get into Hank's more regularly. He's like, I'm on it. So he reached out to Francine over at Hank's, and she runs all of the marketing stuff for Green Valley. And he was like, Lisa wants to do, you know, a day a week. Is that possible? She said, let me get back to you. And then I kid you not, a week later, she was like, let's give her Thursdays. So now I'm there every Thursday for sure. It's a contracted gig, which is great. And they really, like, hold on to that contract. And then they were having me do a couple Saturdays here and there just to fill in for people. But so I'm going to be there every Thursday no matter what for the remainder of the year. And then every so often fill in a date or two. But it's a lot of singing, so I don't mind having, you know, one or two days there. That's plenty.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, you have a great deal of experience and background in musical theater. And I want to talk about your experiences in a couple of shows that aren't around anymore, but people still remember, starting with Pin Up, which ran for 4 years at the Stratosphere and was one of the most popular female reviews during that time. What was it like to sing in that kind of a show? Because it must have been a lot different from your other on-stage experiences.
It was so different. Yeah, like you said, my musical theater background, and I have a BFA from Boston Conservatory of Music. When I did that show, it was like, sing all of the pop songs, and I did a rock song and one jazz song. So it was a wide variety as well. But the thing that was so, and obviously looking back, hindsight's always 2020, but looking back on it, I was so young. I was 22 or 23 when I was cast as the headliner, the singer. And that's a big responsibility, a vocal responsibility. My voice is, now that I'm such a voice nerd and teach it and stuff, I now know that my voice is still changing during that time. And it's a heavy weight, you know, vocal weight load, and a big responsibility. So I think the pressure of that responsibility, had I been a little older, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. And I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it because I very much did, but it was just a big responsibility. So after that responsibility was taken off of my shoulders and I decided to leave and join Baz, I felt a bit of relief, but had I not had those 4 years of experience, I don't think I would be anywhere close to where I am now. So that was kind of like the launching pad of my career here in town. It gave me a better insight of what my voice was and wasn't capable of, all that sort of stuff. So I owe a large majority of my success, if you would call it, to that show and what they gave me and what I learned from it. And I mean, I could go on and on about it, but it shaped me as an artist and as a person.
And then you went from that to Baz, which I have to say is one of my all-time favorite shows. You were in when it was at the Palazzo. Did you cover multiple roles in that show?
Yeah, so I had seen it at Mandalay Bay while I was still in pinup, and I was with a friend of mine and looked at him and said, I'm going to be in the show when it comes back. And I like put all of my energy and my effort into getting myself ready for that audition. And when it came, I got cast. And when that show originally opened, it was just me. Chris Lash was another Vegas local, but he was our musical director. So in terms of cast, I was the only Vegas person. So I went into it, knew nothing, knew no one. And then we, like Mayfair, was a part of the creation process. And I had a role that they labeled Sadie, which Sadie was one of the two female, like, I guess, ensemble. It was an ensemble of four, so you could barely call it ensemble, but they called it a featured role. And then I would swing. My main swing position was Juliet. So I would swing in for Juliet, and I was learning Satine and Daisy before I left.
Yeah, that show was so much fun. Again, a little bit like Mayfair. It was, like, very different from other stuff going on the strip at the time. And the amount of talented performers that were involved with Baz during its, you know, relatively short time.
Right.
It's just incredible. Just incredible.
I mean, and my favorite thing, I'm actually finding a little bit of, you know, similar verbiage I'm going to use between Baz and Mayfair. The most important thing for me is feeling creatively fulfilled, right? If I'm going and clocking in and clocking out every day, that's not art, right? So with Mayfair and Baz, I felt that sense of creative fulfillment that is really hard to do as a professional, particularly in a city like Vegas where there are, you know, casino executives with their input and what's going to make money and what's going to sell. Baz was that sweet spot of, I mean, it sold well while I was in it, but it was that sweet spot of being creative and having a financially successful show. So, and I think Mayfair does that too. And it made my heart so happy. And I mean, in what world did I ever think I would move back to Vegas with my musical theater degree with a Shakespeare emphasis and get to do Shakespeare? Like, that was just so cool for me. So I got to nerd out with that a little bit too.
Now, more recently, you put together your own band, the LMS band, to go out there and get, like, play corporate events and private gigs and different kinds of things. That was going along really well right before this pandemic, of course. can you kind of tell that story once again?
Yeah. So, oh, man. Obviously, in our field, and as I explained, you know, starting in the city when I was 23, I don't remember, and now I'm 31, that's a decent amount of time for me to kind of figure out where I wanted the trajectory of my career to go. And I love the creative elements and aspects of Mayfair and Baz and stuff like that, but I'm at the mercy of someone else, right? Somebody else creates it. I join it. I give everything I can to it. And regardless of how much I care about it, it can close. So I noticed this trend, and I was like, okay, now it's time for me to decide what's going to close and what's going to open. So I created my own band, and I wanted the quality of the band to be substantially higher than I had an expectation of a band to be. So I brought in, you know, all my buddies. Obviously, Isaac is my man, and he was a trumpet player for Human Nature and Matt Goss and Boyz II Men and all these people. So he had a really great relationship with some of these top tier musicians. And everyone needs work right now, right? So he would contact them, and we all became friends, and we created this insane group of musicians. And we were doing the normal stuff, like what any lounge band does or party band or corporate band. But I firmly believe that it was like a higher quality product. Not saying that other bands aren't, but I had so much pride for the quality of these musicians and how I could throw them a song and they would learn it on a break. So we would have like a private party and be like, hey, they want us to do blah, blah, blah. And they would all, like all 10 people would go and learn their part in 10 minutes and come back, and it would be quite decent. And that's pretty impressive. So I owe all of the success of, quote unquote, success, temporary success of that band to those guys. And it started to show. So all of these, you know, party agencies and booking agencies and DMCs were contacting us for a large variety of corporate events. And in, I think in right before at the end of February, we had done like 6 corporate events in 1 week. And for a little engine that could, with less than a year of experience, that's pretty decent. And I was really proud of it. Like, it wasn't I wasn't trying to be like, we're better than everyone, but I was so happy about it. And we got this massive corporate booked by Dragon Talent Agency, and it was in LA. So it was our first huge out of town gig, and it was for a stock agency in New York City. So obviously a high profile client, a decent paycheck, and we were going to be doing multiple days there and flying everyone out. I personally like booked everyone's flights, and we got canceled the night before we were all driving out. So less than 12 hours. And it was like, gig's canceled. This massive show, I guarantee you they've probably spent upwards of $500,000 on this production, this venue. It was big money. And they just cut it all with very little notice. And I remember being like, you're going to do all that? You're going to lose that much money for this? Because the coronavirus had not become as mainstream. We didn't know nearly as much about it yet.
Yeah, it's hard to. It's June now. It's hard to think about what we were even thinking in February and early March. You know, it just wasn't. That seems like such a long time ago, even though it was only a few months ago. And obviously, everything's changed since then.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Like, I could not wrap my head around something. I'm like, you're gonna. I understand like smaller things or whatever, but you're gonna cancel probably $500,000 event. And then I learned that there were people flying in from all over the world, and these people knew the severity of this virus well before any of us did. And that was the moment for me where I was like, oh crud, this is going to happen, and it's going to happen fast. And then sure enough, within that week span, we lost the rest of our corporate gigs for the entire year. We had one in September that got canceled. Within a week, all of that, all the lounges canceled. We got our 2 weeks notice pay for Mayfair, but we got our pink slip, who was like effective immediately. So we canceled that. We canceled everything in under a week. And that was like the first sign of things to come. So yeah, I'm hoping that LMS, once everything kind of comes back, gets to jump right back into where we started. But it's a little farther out than I probably hoped. So,
Well, one thing that you had been doing that you have been able to continue doing is teaching. You've been teaching music and voice for a while, and you've been able to keep doing that in a virtual way, right?
Mm-hmm. After my voice injury, I decided, and I talk about it openly because the stigma around anything voice related is always like, they didn't take care of themselves, or they didn't have proper technique. It's just not the case. Like, I always describe it like an athlete gets injured. That doesn't make them less of an athlete. Something happened, and that's that. So I wanted to give back all of the information that I learned over a year of rehabilitation. I stumbled into working with some of the best people in the world for this, thanks to the Actors Equity, the union. They were able to pay and put me in contact with these incredible people. And I mean, that's a significant amount of money that I would have spent, you know, to learn all this information, regardless of my degree. We're talking like voice rehab and science-based and voice pedagogy, and just some really getting into the depths of singing. And I was like, what am I going to do with all this information? Obviously, it's great for me, but I need to give this back somehow. So I opened my own voice studio, and ranging in age from 6 to 65. Like, I have a large range of students, and getting some master's credits right now. So during quarantine, I was studying a lot. And then when I wasn't studying, I would be teaching. I had online Zoom lessons. And that was a bit of a learning curve to make sure that there wasn't a latency issue or like the quality of the sound was good. But thanks to Isaac, we hooked up some fancy stuff in our studio, and I haven't had any complaints, which is nice. So that helped. And just giving me something to do during quarantine that wasn't necessarily just about me or focusing on us just made the time nice. And I know not everyone's that lucky, but you kind of start asking yourself, what's the future going to look like, and how am I going to make this happen for myself instead of waiting for somebody to tell me what to do? Or, I didn't want to wait. So it worked out.
It's a recurring issue, right? Obviously you got to deal with what it's like to not have to work, all the official business of that, and making money and paying bills, which is difficult and challenging. But then as an artist, you also have to deal with, maintaining and nurturing yourself as an artist and making sure that you have some sort of a creative space while we're all dealing with the mental pressures and anxiety of this thing that no one's ever really dealt with before. So
yeah,
there's a lot that goes into it for everybody.
Yeah. And I would talk to all my close friends, my close singer friends. We all had the same thought. We were like, we don't want to sing. I didn't sing for a month. And at first it was nice, right, to give myself a break. We made a joke like all of our voices were going to be super fresh and it was going to be wonderful. But then after a while, that drive and desire to sing was still not there with so many of us. And had to ask ourselves why, right? And you're right, it was the stress and the fear of the unknown. And I think the only way I got out of that mentality was to focus on my students. The second I switched my focus, I would listen to them sing something, like from Waitress, and be like, I want to do that too. And I caught myself listening to them being like, hey, wait a minute. And then I would hang up with them on Zoom and then turn on the song and do it in my room. So it was almost like I saw somebody else doing it and it made me miss it. But if you didn't see anyone else doing it, or you weren't kind of exposing yourself to it for whatever reason, you kind of lost that. And that happened to me for quite a while and some of my friends. So it was a weird, weird time, and it still is. It's not over. So
there's not a lot of entertainers who are kind of back performing again. It's obviously going to be a slow rebuild to getting back to where we were and getting these larger shows turned back on. But it's got to be fantastic for you to be able to perform again in front of an audience.
Yeah, I was, I told you this before we started talking today, that I do feel very grateful, and I will not sit here ever and say, there's no problems and I'm back to work, so forget everyone and everything else. The amount of empathy and I'm almost feeling a little guilty. There is definitely some guilt that is happening, and I knew I was going back to work weeks ago and, started rehearsals for Mayfair under super strict quarantine. And I didn't want to tell anyone about it because I felt so bad. I mean, my man, he doesn't have a gig on the book. He hasn't had a gig since March 13th, and his first one for a private party on the 4th of July. And other than that, that's it. So most people are in his situation, and I don't want to talk about it too much, which I should, because I'm grateful to be doing it, and I'm happy to be doing it, and that's my job. But it's tough. So it's a weird little seesaw that I'm kind of going through. One hand, I'm really grateful, and I run back to work. And another hand, I don't want anyone to know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah. So I just got lucky. I don't know if I did anything or it was just a large coincidence that the two people that I was creating a super strong relationship with happened to be restaurants. So I just happened to be able to walk into it again. But I think it was mostly luck.
We'll be right back.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast. Thanks, as always, for listening. You can find past episodes of this show at lasvegassun.com/podcasts or listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Big thanks to Lisa Marie Smith. You can catch her performing two nights a week at Mayfair Supper Club at Bellagio. Thanks again for listening. Take care. Wear that mask. Have a great week.